Hello out there in Twitter land, YouTube land, and wherever else you happen to be finding this. We're back here with another episode of Fighting the Void. And today has, first of all the way over on my right, you can see the normally lovely Crystal. She's taken on a bit of a different appearance today. Don't tell. Yeah, she did do something different with her hair.
Yeah. I dyed it. But the hairdresser did this really weird chop, so I have to.
It's amazing what a difference the hairstyle makes, really.
Right?
And as you can see, also, Crystal is also the only one of us here that doesn't have kids. So, and we're all.
Well, I don't have kids.
And now she's gone.
He doesn't have kids either.
Oh, I don't. Jacob, you have kids.
I have a fur baby.
Oh, I thought you had kids. Never mind. What's your excuse? All right. Welcoming back to the show. We're bringing back Jacob Airy from the Daily Wire and also Studio Jake over on YouTube. And, of course, on Twitter at Real Jacob Airy. So, Jake, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Oh, always a pleasure. And today, of course, it's Halloween, so don't worry. We're going to do, it's the day before Halloween, All Hallows Eve. And as naturally, we'll do the obligatory basic talking about scary movies. Don't worry, we're going to get there. And, to start out, I wanted to talk about Joker a little bit because it kind of took the social media world by storm for a little bit. There were YouTube commentaries flying left and right. You couldn't go on YouTube without getting slapped in the face by one of these things, I swear. And obviously it's probably the single most talked about movie of the year, to be perfectly honest, with the possible exception of Rise of Skywalker. And I guess Endgame. Yeah, that was a little thing. Other than those two movies, it's easily the best. I mean, probably one of the most profitable movies of the year. So, Jacob, you and I, we both saw it. So, what did you think of Joker? Did it live up to the hype? What were your thoughts on it?
I thought it definitely lived up to the hype. I didn't think it exceeded the hype. I don't know what company I'm in, but I thought Avengers Endgame exceeded the hype. Okay. I didn't think Joker did, but I thought it lived up to it. But okay. I did think it was really good. It's one of those movies. I was actually talking to Michael Knowles about this. I feel like it was a movie that if they hadn't have gotten Joaquin Phoenix, because he's just such a great actor, yeah, it would have been terrible. But
I agree.
But his acting really carried the movie. Mm-hmm. Really thought especially. One of the things I found a little bit funny was Todd Phillips, the director, he made a really big deal about saying, oh yeah, it's the Joker, but we're not taking anything from the comic books. This is like my own spin on it, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. Well, it's so funny because while I was watching, I was going, that's from the comics, that's from the comics, that's from the comics. But that's, you know, a geek like me, I'm gonna see stuff like that all the time. But I did think it was really good. I thought it was, I found the character study version of the Joker was really good. That's what I thought this was. It was more, as opposed to like the Dark Knight and Tim Burton's Batman, they showed Joker's impact on Gotham. Right. This movie showed Gotham's impact on Joker, or Arthur Fleck, as he's called.
That's a perfect way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I thought that was, and that's always risky, especially when you're doing a villain. But
probably the most iconic fictional villain of all time.
IGN rated him the second most iconic after Magneto, and I don't know how they came to that conclusion.
I'm sorry, the only one that holds a candle is Darth Vader.
Yeah,
I'm dead serious.
Totally agree with you.
Yeah. 100%.
I thought that it was really good, really fantastic film. It was really weird seeing Todd Phillips go from those kind of cringy comedies. I don't mean cringy as in they're bad. I just mean, you know, cringe humor to the kind of this dark, look at the Joker. And a few people were saying that it made you empathize with his character and they were criticizing it for that. I didn't get that. I didn't empathize with him, but not where I felt sympathy for him. I didn't think, oh man, I feel bad that he's going through this, but I didn't go, oh man, he's totally right in doing I don't want to give spoilers away, but he's totally right in doing this or killing that person.
I'm going to go ahead and say spoilers, not Because let's face it, as much money as this movie has already made, everyone that has wanted to see it has seen it. If you care about spoilers, you're not watching this anyway. So yeah. Except maybe for Crystal, I don't know. What's that?
What did you say, Ginger?
I was just saying, except maybe you. I know you haven't seen it yet, so should we refrain from spoilers?
I don't even want to see it, so.
Okay, now that's an interesting thought. Why don't you want to see it? Because I know, like Jacob and I, you're a fellow Batman fan, so.
Okay, I can say my spicy takes since I'm already dead, so I'm canceled already. So I don't.
Spice it up.
I don't want to see it because it goes against my thing of what makes Joker the best villain, and that's the fact you don't know who he truly is.
Hmm.
So for me, I don't want to watch a movie that is supposed to be his backstory because I don't want to know his backstory. I don't. I go back to that. I'm still blanking on what comic that was. Where there was one comic where, you know, it tells the story of like, oh, he was this guy who was married and they had a child, but he lost a job.
Killing Joke.
And then it's like he became the Red Hood and then this and that. But then by the end of it, you know, because Batman or one of the characters is like, we know who you are. And Joker's like, you think I tell you the real story? Or something along the lines of that, more Joker-esque said. But it's like, I like that concept. So anything that goes against that concept, I'm kind of like, not for me. I'm good.
Well, no, there's a couple of things, though, they did in the movie that kind of still leave that open. One is there's this whole subplot where you're led to think for a while that he's actually Thomas Wayne's illegitimate son. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's not what you're thinking.
Like, you're led to think that.
Yeah, I know. I didn't like that either. And to Crystal's point, this is actually why I almost didn't go see it.
Right.
What made me go see it is because one of our managing editors at the Daily Wire said, if you go see it, you can write the review for it. And I was like, I'm not going to let Paul Blois beat me to this. So for the Paul Blois, the guy who reviews movies on the Daily Wire. So I was like, okay, so I'm going to go. So that's one reason why I did go see it on opening night. That's but no, I do understand that criticism. This was one of this was actually almost why I didn't like Gotham, because you know the origin of the Joker or the proto Joker is what they were calling it. But I feel like Gotham did enough with the arc where you saw where it led up. Mm-hmm. But I do understand that criticism. But in the context of the film, if you look at it, like I went to it as an Elseworlds story, and if you go to it like that, that kind of eases the pain a little bit. But like Ginger said, or this side, they do set you up maybe to doubt some of the events that happen in the movie.
Yeah, there's that, and also there's that subplot, but also it's revealed, and I think this part is legitimate, where his mother turns out to be also a paranoid, delusional individual who has spent time in Arkham, and one of the things that they're like, yeah, no, you adopted. Fleck was adopted, so you don't actually know his real name. At all. You still don't actually know who he is. You kind of know how he came to be, although like Jacob just pointed out, this was the other thing I was going to say, was that you're certainly led to believe, well, definitely some parts of the movie were not real, but the parts that I say definitely, it was clear this is clearly in Fleck's imagination. Like right away there's a scene when they're watching the Murray show, the Robert De Niro plays the late night comedian. And there's a scene where he suddenly imagines himself in the audience and has a big old conversation with Murray and everything, obviously in his imagination. Mm-hmm. There's one or two other spots like that in the movie. Where it's like, okay, obviously that's not real. But there's more than enough. And then you find out later on in the movie that there's definitely other parts that weren't real. then by the end of it, you're kind of like, was this whole thing just in his head? Was it?
I don't know if you, there's this great Reddit subreddit I'm a part of called fan theories. And like, there are so many ones about Joker. It's really funny. The moderator even had to put a note and it's like, okay guys, we're going to have to consolidate because we've got so many posts about Joker and like people trying to tie it to the Dark Knight and all of this. It was really fun. I don't think just to be clear, it's totally not tied to the Dark Knight. I think that's completely wishful thinking, but anyway, yeah, it's really funny how like, because of some of the events in the film, people are like trying to piece together what was actually an illusion and what was actually real. It's really interesting to read.
I do like that idea though, that you could tie it into the Nolanverse.
Oh yeah.
And be like, yeah, this is just what happened. This is just what happened to Heath Ledger's Joker. He just got old in Arkham and just spun crazy stories for whatever social worker was working with him.
I was about to say, to go on what you said about, is this entire movie just in his head? I was about to say, plot twist, guy isn't Joker at all. It's just some inmates of Arkham Asylum who idolizes Joker and wishes he was Joker.
I actually said he's not the actual Joker. He's the guy who inspires the Joker. That was, I wrote that on my blog a while back. In my humble opinion, I thought the film could definitely, that could still be valid after watching the film, but I'm not, I haven't been brave enough to write a follow-up to explain my reasoning, but you know, I could actually see that being the case.
Well, and that was kind of the closest thing to an official line that there was before the movie was released, that it's not Joker, it's another proto Joker. And you know, as that, it's like, okay, but I'll be honest, I've never liked the idea that the Joker was inspired by another Joker.
That's true.
I've always disliked that idea. I've always found the idea that, again, like Crystal was saying, and you also, Jacob, that it's better that he just seems to come from nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing you can tie him to. You know, he is what he is, and he's just there to burn it down.
Right.
Because the whole thing that makes Joker scary is the fact that he could be anyone, and that's why he causes mayhem, because anyone could go there. And I feel like I should clarify two things. One, in general, I'm just a picky movie person. Like I will use the example of I hate to admit I like Thor Ragnarok because I did not want to watch another Marvel movie. Well, we've already established my feelings on Marvel. But I'm just a picky movie goer. And two, the thing that also turns me off from the Joker is, I can't remember, was it a actual festival movie or not? Because all I know is that that explains it, because I am turned off from festival movies like Sundance and whatnot, because to me, they just, sorry to any Sundance movies that aren't like this, and maybe I'm wrong, but it's just, they always have like this air of pretentiousness. Pretentiousness, and it always turns me off, and I'm like, ooh, no.
Yeah, I agree with you, Crystal. In fact, that really concerned me, because a lot of these, I hate to say this, like these trendy films that are like more supposed to be art house films or whatever, they send them to film fest, like Lars von Trier, who basically just makes pornography, but he always sends it to film fest, and so it gets rave reviews, and then they play the trailer in a regular movie theater, and parents are like shielding their kids' eyes and stuff,
right?
And you know, so that actually concerned me, because they did do that with Joker. They send it to all these film fests,
right?
It got glowing reviews, and I'm like, oh my gosh, is this going to be one of these movies? But let me rest assure you, I did not find the Joker pretentious at all. I found it like a legit character study. So I do understand that criticism ever so slightly, but just in my opinion, I didn't find it that way. I thought Todd Phillips approached this character study very well. Like I said, I treated it like an Elseworlds.
Yeah.
And they said it's not connected to any DC film.
Right. Right. And, so and treating it like an Elseworlds is exactly what you had to do into it. And, you know, I was totally fine with that going into it. You know, that said, I didn't think it quite lived up to the hype. I thought it was well done. I completely agree with you that Joaquin Phoenix was fantastic. There's no doubt about it. I thought De Niro did a really good job doing what he did. Basically, I thought all the actors and everything did their jobs well. I just found the movie itself relatively uninteresting. I was like, okay, disturbed guy gets more disturbed. And yeah, he gets really disturbed. And I found actually the most interesting part of the movie, the way that that winds up spreading out to this other sort of pre-existing movement, and how that interaction, that sort of feedback loop. I thought that was probably the most interesting aspect of the movie there towards the end. You know, it's not that I don't think it wasn't a good movie. I just didn't think it lived up to the hype. And part of that may be that I already knew too much about it going in. That's entirely possible. I probably listened to too many people talking about it before I went into it, which usually does have a negative effect on how I wind up feeling about a movie.
I don't know how I feel about
that. Said, go ahead, Crystal.
I don't know how I feel about the fact that you two are both making me actually consider resurrecting myself and going to a theater to see this movie. I really do not know how I feel about that.
I would say if there's a convenient time, go catch it in the theater, because it's worth watching. Again, it's gonna vary. Like I said, I was kind of watching it going, okay, and I was mostly watching for the signs that it was going on in his head, because I very much dislike movies where it's like, oh yeah, none of that actually happened.
Yeah.
I really, 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 and usually I find movies that make you wonder that to just be annoying, because it seems like just a reason for the filmmakers to be pretentious, essentially, and be like, oh, well, you don't understand. It's like, oh, shut up. All that is lazy excuse for you to just do whatever you want and to get out of trying to make a cohesive story. That's what that is. The one exception, the one clear exception I make to that rule is Inception, and that's because discerning reality from fantasy was central to the plot.
Right.
That was like the whole point of the movie.
It's kind of like
I was okay with that.
It's kind of like the equivalent of the English literature teacher being like, you see, class, when you read this passage, the curtains are dark blue, which are to highlight the depression of the character. And then you just hear the author somewhere in the world going, his curtains were blue.
His curtains were blue.
I remember there was this author who wrote like a murder mystery, I think, and it was really famous. It escapes me. My sister actually told me this story, so I'm forgetting a lot of the details. But basically, this woman author, she wrote this very famous murder mystery, and one of the things is they describe a certain door as red, and it was a door that wasn't necessarily connected to the rest of the plot. It's just something one of the characters saw, and so apparently there was like theses being written on why this one door was red. And so I guess like at some point a reporter tracked her down, like some sort of literary writer or literary theorist tracked her down, and they said, why did you make this door red? And the writer literally replied, red's my favorite color. And that was all these psychological analysis, and it was just the writer's favorite color. That's like what it boiled down to. So sometimes I feel like people, when they watch movies like Joker, they want to read so much into it, but really Todd Phillips was, I'm just going to give you a good old time and make you question reality.
Yeah. I love that. That is fantastic.
I'm almost half tempted to do something like that myself. So it's like a purposely done troll boob.
Why were the walls green? To symbolize fertility. No, because the green paint was on sale at Sherwin-Williams, Jackal.
Exactly. It was on sale, dude. I like green. Get off my back.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But then again, you get those random times when it does matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
But see, now this whole conversation, it proves true one of the first thoughts I had after getting out of the movie. It was, this movie's going to be way more fun to talk about than it was to watch.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. Again, like you said, with the Reddit, with all the different fan theories and everything, it's like, Oh, yeah. I can see how it could work. I said that could work. Nah, you're just reaching. But it is fun, and it is what we nerds love to do. We love to speculate about what was this really getting at? How could this connect? Whether it does or not is almost immaterial. The fact is, it's fun spinning the theories.
Oh yeah, 100%. What my favorite one was. So remember at the beginning, Ginger, remember at the beginning of the film, he's talking to his counselor and like he has a brief flash of him in a straitjacket and banging his head against the door.
Yes.
All right. So that's at the very beginning of the movie. Yep. And then at the end, he's back in Arkham. Mm-hmm. Someone hypothesized the theory that those were the only two real scenes.
And that's kind of what I thought.
That was my favorite theory just because it was the most outlandish, but it really made me chuckle. Like I thought that was the great, it was him thudding his head against the door in his straitjacket and then talking to the counselor at the end.
I was suspecting that all throughout the movie, to be honest. Because I just thought that one scene of him in the straitjacket banging his head against the wall, I thought that was such an odd cut to make.
Yeah.
Just it was completely like unlike any of the other flashbacks or anything like that. I was like, what if that's the only thing I've seen so far that's real? The whole time I'm thinking that. And then you get to the end, and sure enough, he's in Arkham. Mm-hmm. And in the straitjacket. And he's talking to a counselor who I'm pretty sure was the same woman who was the social worker that he was talking to at the beginning. So I'm just like, so in your story, did you just cast her in the same role, just at a lower pay rate?
Well, guess I'm resurrecting myself.
I was like, especially when I got to that, I was like, I could come up with other theories that still support that some of the other stuff that I saw was real and everything. And just in his mind, he was equating the two. You could definitely make that theory. And then still like most of what was happening was still real, but it's much simpler to just say, no, straitjacket scenes are all that's real. And I even doubt the last straitjacket scene when he walks out of the hall and he's leaving footprints of blood.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Although I have to say, that's very Joker of him to be chased by an orderly. So that with that part, I was kind of like, huh, well, maybe.
But
things are like,
he didn't have blood anywhere else on him that we could see. Which makes me think, yeah, that was fake. Even though it would be perfectly Joker-ish for it to not be fake.
Right, exactly.
So it's like, oh, crazy. But yeah, in all honesty, it does, at the very least, Phillips has range.
Mm-hmm.
He has range as a director, so good for him. Obviously, like I said, we know Joaquin Phoenix was just fantastic. Before we move off of the Joker, there was of course a lot of discussion, Jacob, about the politics of the movie. What did you make of that, one way or the other?
I honestly thought, in my opinion, I honestly thought it was a reaction to the heated rhetoric, because a few people were saying, oh, because, you know, all the lefties were saying, oh, it's so right wing, and all the right wingers were saying, oh, it's so lefty. I really feel, I'm actually kind of down the middle. I feel like it was, because one of the things about him, Arthur Fleck, right, first he thinks he's Thomas Wayne's illegitimate son, and you know he thought, he before that he was thinking, you know, he kind of saw this Douglas Murray, the Robert De Niro character, as kind of a far off father figure, and then he lets him down. But who doesn't let him down are the people he's kind of accidentally inspiring,
right.
And so he realizes at the beginning of the film when he's working for that clown agency. You know, that older clown, he's like, you're my boy, Arthur. And then he betrays him. And so he's just being constantly let down by fathers and or father figures. So I thought it was really a story about if men don't have a strong father figure, then they're going to get caught up, because before he knows it, he's actually become this icon of this clown movement.
Yeah.
And so I really feel like, to me, it was more a statement about how, and I know this is true because I've had relatives who have suffered with this, how we have dropped the ball for people like an Arthur Fleck who suffer from mental illness. I really feel like I said, it was about Gotham's impact on him as opposed to his impact on the Joker. And to me, that's what it was more about. I wouldn't be surprised if we found out later that Todd Phillips really was just trying to make this film and he couldn't sell it. So he says, what if I made it a Joker film? And that actually would not surprise me. I had heard that early on the scripts where they were more like John Gacy, but I think that, because he was obviously this killer clown, but they were going to just use him more as inspiration, but then Phillips couldn't sell it. And that's when he thought, oh, I'll make this a Joker movie. Maybe if I pitch it that way, it'll work. And I really feel like we're going to be hearing that down the road, that it was the original look of it was not supposed to be Joker. And then they just changed the aesthetic. They added Arkham, had it take place in Gotham, which if you notice in the movie, they never mention Gotham. Even when they're talking about Thomas Wayne running for mayor, they never say Gotham City. They just say he's running for mayor. And that really made me think, oh, I don't think this was originally a
I think they might have mentioned it at some point, actually.
Oh, it may have been mentioned once, but I don't think it was it wasn't prominent.
It would be easy to add. Even if you like shot the whole thing.
And you said,
wait a minute, we never actually said anywhere in the movie that we're in Gotham. Quick, we got to do a quick reshoot.
They were reshooting scenes that had already been finished as they were finishing the film. So, I mean, I think even Joaquin Phoenix made a comment, I'm constantly going back in with new ideas for the script. And I think that's probably a part of it. They had probably already done some preliminary shooting, but never mentioned Thomas Wayne or Gotham or Arkham, and they just had to work it in there. Hence why his name is Arthur Fleck, because Joker has had many aliases that they could have stolen from, and I think, but they chose a totally original name. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that early on, we'll probably find out the script was originally called Fleck, and before it became the Joker or Joker.
Yeah, isn't that honestly? Is completely plausible. Like I've heard, I don't remember who, I don't know if it was Matt Jarbo, Steve Dace, or somebody else who floated that very same idea. And it makes perfect sense. I honestly think you're probably right on the money about that. But as it is, again, I'd say it was, I think a lot of people will find it very interesting. Again, I find it very interesting to discuss after the fact. I will say this. His transformation by the end, I did really like that.
Yes.
Like that, just where all of a sudden it's like, you know, right before you switch to that last sequence in Arkham, it's like, oh, yeah, he is now officially the Joker.
Well, and that's another thing I was saying, like, oh, that whole sequence is from The Dark Knight Returns. They made it where he's pre-Joker instead of he's after the Joker. I don't know if you are familiar with The Dark Knight Returns, but that whole sequence was from The Dark Knight Returns. I mean, it was kind of obvious.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was good. Just the whole there was a lot there that I definitely did enjoy, especially towards the end. Not just because it got more violent, but because it's like, oh, okay, now there's things that are actually happening in the he's really becoming a very at least Joker like character here, and that was interesting. And again, Phoenix pulled it off wonderfully. What do you think, Jacob? Are they going to do a sequel or not?
No, but it wouldn't be surprised me if they try to nab Joaquin Phoenix for the Matt Reeves film. That movie has been facing delay after delay, but I think, especially after it's been received, they're just going to say, oh, he's playing the Joker, but he's not the same Joker. But then we'll just have more fan theories to write about. But I honestly think they're going to at least try to nab him, because we all know Jared Leto's done. I think they finally canceled the Joker and Harley Quinn movie, although that's been, back and forth. It's been canceled, then it was revived, then it's canceled. Now Jared Leto, he's throwing all these hissy fits about Joaquin Phoenix. So I think, I honestly think they will at some point try to bring back Phoenix as the Joker, but I think, I believe Todd Phillips when he says this was meant to be just a one-off.
I agree. I don't think it's meant to be connected in any way, shape, or form. And if they do try to connect it, well, in all honesty, they could fit it. Again, going with the Joker inspiration model, they could fit it within the existing DCEU.
I believe Scott Snyder, he did this thing in the New 52. Thank God that's over. But there was this really great story arc with the Joker called Endgame, and it kind of implied that there had been more, that there had been a Joker in every generation of Gotham. Mm-hmm. Now, at the end of Endgame, Batman kind of disproves it.
Okay.
But I'm not...
open to interpretation?
Yeah, but it was open to interpretation, where he just basically says, oh, it's just... where Batman's just like, oh, it was just another joke. So they could use that as a means. Like, every generation of Gotham has had a crazy person. So
yeah, I've noticed that theme in the comics for the last few years now, where there's multiple Jokers. And at first, when I first read about it, I thought it was like the Joker we know is actually a combination of the personalities of different Jokers from across the multiverse. I thought that would have been kind of fun. That's why he's so bat crap crazy. Although bat crap crazy in a Hannibal Lecter way. I firmly maintain actually that the Joker is not crazy in the sense of like Looney Tunes. He's crazy in the sense that he actually does have specific goals, but he just has no morality whatsoever. He has certain goals that he wants, and he has zero inhibitions. And I think like in the Dark Knight Joker, he's just a nihilist who wants to prove that everyone else really is just as nihilistic as he is. Everyone's really just like him.
Right, and that's actually why, now, to be clear, I like Jack Nicholson's Joker, but mm-hmm. this is why I think Heath Ledger's Joker is more frightening. Oh, and I get into argument with a friend of mine all the time. He loves, his favorite Batman is Tim Burton's Batman. But my thing is, my thing is, I like the Jack Nicholson Joker. He was clearly based on the Neil Adams Joker, mm-hmm. Kind of more of a deranged gangster. And that's really cool. Yeah. But Heath Ledger's Joker is just, he's more like a virus. And there's really no cure for him. There's just a Batman, to quote a famous comic book. But I find that version of Joker more interesting as a fan. And that, and also, now I know Mark Hamill's Joker, he was somewhat in the Batman the Animated Series, he was kind of based on Burton's Joker, but it still had that element. We don't really know his origin other than he fell into a thing of acid. That's all we know about him.
And he could go on these weird, and he would go off in these odd directions sometimes that got right. you much more into Heath Ledger space. And frankly, sometimes even scarier than Heath Ledger. It's the Return of the Joker. Is honestly, that may be the scariest Joker.
Oh yeah, the uncut version is probably the uncut version of Return of the Joker is one of the craziest films I've ever seen. I actually understand why they didn't release that one on Cartoon Network, because it's incredibly more bloody, it's incredibly more scary, and it's more like Batman Mask of the Phantasm version of the Joker, which is of the animated series. That's my favorite Joker appearance, probably outside of the Laughing Fish.
Oh gosh. that takes me back right there. Okay. All right. Well, let's put a little bow on Joker here.
Okay.
And second half of the show, let's discuss some scary movies.
Yeah.
Give me your top five.
Top five.
Top five. If you don't have top five, that's fine. Get the closest.
I know my number one will always be The Conjuring.
Okay.
Second, it's been a while since I've seen it, but I'm going to have to go with Scream.
Okay.
I don't know. Those are the top two that I can think of. I can't really think of many more because a lot of the other ones I can think of I've seen. I really need to catch up on my horror movie classics like Halloween and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
But all the other ones I've seen, I didn't like. So I'm going to have to go with The Conjuring and Scream. So the second Conjuring wasn't too bad. The Annabelle ones, no. We don't talk about the Annabelle ones.
Fair enough. So what is it about The Conjuring in particular that you like? Because we've got a very self-aware slasher movie. Mm-hmm. And very, very well reviewed. I haven't seen it myself, but very well reviewed a possession story.
I haven't seen Conjuring either.
Oh, really? Okay.
Okay. Well, now it's my turn. So I think where The Conjuring is successful is in the fact that it's, I don't want to say realistic because not everyone would believe that ghosts and whatnot would actually happen. But like if you were to do a scary movie and like based on our reality and like the superstitions and ideas we have, The Conjuring really succeeds at it because a lot of horror movies that do like ghosts and whatnot, they do like this ghost stuff where it's like, oh yeah, the ghost always looks like this and that and whatnot. And where I think it really succeeds, and I was telling Lucas about this, is James Wan utilizes as a director the idea that it's scary not seeing what's there.
Mm-hmm.
Like you hear it,
yep.
Like moving things, you see like everything it's doing, but you don't see what's actually there. And I think the scene that, spoilers, I think the scene that really highlights that is there's one scene where it's the bedroom of two of the daughters, one which is Nancy and the other which is Christine. They're both like really young, like what, preteen or not even preteen, I'd say, barely preteen. And Christine is, they're both lying in bed asleep, and Christine's lying in bed. And like before, it was a thing of like every night in their room, Christine would smell something like rant. Oh yeah, she smelled something rancid, which they explain in the movie is like a sign of demonic presence when you smell like some like death, like something dying rotten. So she smells that, and then you see like her blanket. I think the blanket kind of moves, but if not, all of a sudden you just see her entire body like get pulled towards the edge of the bed, like someone grabbed her ankle and then pulled her. And then like she like gets up, yells at her sister, and her sister's like clearly in the other bed, and she. And it kind of goes on like that, like them bickering and whatnot. And then at one point, Christine looks over at like their door, and she's like just staring at it. And it's like you as the audience, you don't see anything. It's just black. It's just dark. You don't see anything. So it's like I think that's a really good scene that utilizes it because she's like just staring at this corner. You don't see it. Her sister doesn't see it. In fact, her sister goes over, investigates, opens the door and whatnot, and then you still don't see anything, but then suddenly the door slams shut, and then just chaos ensues. And you didn't see what caused it. So it's moments like that where it's like he really utilizes the whole you fear what you don't see. And there's actually a lot of that throughout the movie. In fact, you don't see anything unless you're seeing something through the perspective of Lorraine Warren, which is the psychic of the movie.
Hmm.
Now that I think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, just POV like that. That's interesting. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Jacob.
I always go back and forth, and I'll be honest, I'm more of a connoisseur of psychological thrillers than I am horror. So a lot of a lot of mine are more psychological, but my number one is always The Shining. I mean, that movie, I'm a big Stanley Kubrick fan. I think he's one of the, he's one, in fact, whenever I did my famous Nolan tweet that Ginger is aware of probably, people were sending me pictures of Stanley Kubrick, and I'm like, he's dead. Like, yes, he was a visionary director, but he's dead. But it really saddens me that Stephen King didn't appreciate the film, because now I've never read the novel. I have read other Stephen King novels, but I really felt like The Shining really kept me on the edge of my seat. And even when I saw it, I had seen memes of the Here's Johnny.
Yeah.
It still scared me, even though I knew it was coming. Like, that's a good filmmaker. You know it's coming, but it still scares you. That'll always be my number one as far as horror and psychological thrillers. By the way, this list fluctuates all the time, but number two is the first Alien film.
That's on there. Yep.
Oh yeah, I love that movie. It's super scary. It's, and best of all, it's science fiction. It's science fiction scary. And I feel, and one of the things is, I know I'm in the minority of this, I actually like Alien 3 because David Fincher was trying to return Alien to that horror, because 2 was more, it was more action, it was more science fiction action, did have scary scenes, but it was more about the action. So I actually appreciate that. Now, that's not on this list. I'm just saying I appreciate what Fincher was trying to do.
Right.
Sixth Sense, when M. Night Shyamalan was still good. Or I should say when he was great. Now he's good, I guess. But, you know, he had a slump, but now he's back, I guess. But I really like The Sixth Sense. I really think that was when Shyamalan was at his height. I think it was his second film. And for that to be your second film, that's pretty impressive. Let's see. I'm trying to think of a top five right now. Oh, Jaws. I love Jaws. Yeah. It's another one where I knew it was coming, but it still scared me. And again, when Steven Spielberg was great, I love his, I love how he, because it's so funny because he decided to show less of the shark because the robot wouldn't work. But then that ended up being what made this movie so scary.
Exactly what made that movie so good.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of David Fincher, my number five, I got to go with Seven. Again, more of a psychological thriller, but amazing performance by Matt Damon, by Morgan Freeman. And I know he's kind of taboo to mention right now, but Kevin Spacey, fantastic film, very, very frightening, especially when me being a Christian, and even being a Protestant Christian, because, you know, it's based on the seven deadly sins as murders, seeing that aspect of my faith kind of being turned into a weapon is frightening. It's a frightening thing about, you know, abusing faith and abusing the Bible. That's a scary thing. And I'm not sure, like, I hate to use this word, but secular critics kind of picked that up. They just kind of thought, oh, this is a, because they loved it. They thought it was a good film, but I don't think they picked up on that spiritual aspect. And maybe Fincher didn't, but he did. But for me, it just kind of happened by accident. So those would be my, and like I said, this list fluctuates. This isn't a static list like some of my others, but I would have to say that's definitely right now in my top five.
As it should be. As it should, because Seven, honestly, I've only watched it once, and I don't really want to see it again. Not because it is that great, but because there are scenes in that movie that still, like, I just think about them. I'm like, ugh. It scares me just thinking about some of the things. Yeah. There are things in there that are just unsettling.
Yeah, which reminds me, I just realized, would American Psycho be considered psychological horror? Okay, then I'll add that as my third.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great film, too. And I'm actually a huge Alfred Hitchcock connoisseur. I love it. By recently, I mean last year, people are starting to revisit his films and saying they're not as good as we think they are. But I disagree. I love Alfred Hitchcock.
Honestly, he's just a stupid
it's
deconstructionist. Everything you thought was good isn't. Shut up, you freaking millennial.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry, you're a millennial. But
I stole films because my grandparents always had Turner Classic Movies on, and I was like, oh, these movies, like, some of these are actually pretty good, you know. And I think that's actually how I got in. I don't think I saw Psycho on Turner Classic, but I remember I watched one of his. North by Northwest. I saw that film on Turner Classic Movies, okay. And I was like, oh, wow, this is a, you know, it was a little cheesy because it's a product of its time, but it was still a really good film. I love Alfred Hitchcock. His movies are fantastic. I confess, it's a masterpiece. It's that movie, that's one of them. But anyway, it's not really a scary movie, but, you know, just hopping off Psycho.
Yeah, there are certain kinds of scary movies that I find extremely unsettling. And it's usually just like something is after you and you don't know what it is. You don't know why it is. You don't know how it got there. You don't know what happened to make whatever's happening to you. You don't even know what the origin of it was. Just there's this thing that's coming after you. And there seems to be no defense against it. I find that a lot of that thing incredibly unsettling, just like that kind of concept. Like one of the earliest scary things that I ever saw that just like really sticks in my mind was actually, it was a short film, and it sounds kind of crazy to talk about it, but I don't know why this was happening, but it was like this old school film, like unreeled from the spool and was coming after this dude. I don't remember why or anything like that. I just remember for some reason it was coming after him. And it was like poking under doors and through windowsills and everything. You know, he got himself trapped in this room, and eventually it of course got in and just completely like consumed him. And there was nothing left but his clothes. And I just found that incredibly unsettling as a child. And it has stuck with me to this day. Like, that's, you know, yes, the idea that it's an old film reel essentially is kind of admittedly cheesy, but that concept that there's the possibility of something coming after you that is going to do, you don't even know what, you don't even know what's going to happen to you after it's done. And it's just like, you know, the Blob is a perfect example of that kind of movie. There's just this thing. What is it? Where did it come from? Who knows? It's just, it's going to follow you.
It's probably because, and I can't remember where I read or watched this, but it was talking about like the horror genre and things that, you know, you do for scares and things that are like considered legitimately scary. And one of the two biggest things that are the scariest that you could do and portray are either one, things that are unknown, mm-hmm. or two, something that is more powerful than you, that is after you, isn't human, but it looks incredibly human.
Mm-hmm. Hence the vampire like, fast.
Humanoid.
Yeah.
Like, those are the two biggest things. Unknown and something that's humanoid.
Yep.
And the more human it looks, but it actually isn't human, the scarier it tends to be, because you think it's just another one.
Not so much. Yeah, there's a whole, I was thinking about it beforehand, and there's a lot, it depends on the genre. You know, creature feature-wise, the Bay, I don't know if you guys, I can't remember the director's name, but it was the kind of director where you're like, huh, I'm surprised I see his name attached to a movie like this. But it was basically about in the Chesapeake Bay, basically all the pollution and everything in there had mutated some isopods to be extremely aggressive. And basically their larvae would get in you. And basically then as they hatch, they would eat their way out of you.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were getting up to like, you know, 2 feet long and, yeah, things like that. It just basically completely destroyed this whole town within the span of a couple of days. And it was one of those found footage type of movies.
Oh.
And it, it was very effective. It was extremely effective because I was, I for a little while I was nervous about drinking water. I was like, are they getting? No, it's just it's a movie, dumbass. But but the fact that it was that effective at scaring the crap out of me, I was good job. And of course, you know, I love a good zombie movie, though there's very few good zombie movies.
Yeah.
Of course, Night of the Living Dead is a classic. You know, the original is a little bit slow by modern standards, but sometimes that's okay. It's definitely a lesson in how not to try to survive a zombie apocalypse. I know what we should do. You know, there's only like 10 zombies around. Instead of going for the truck, we should just hold up in this house and just wait while they gather. Until there's like literally hordes of hundreds and we can't hold them back. I think that's a good plan.
Isn't that the Geico commercial, right? When you're in a horror movie, you make bad decisions.
Yep. And that was the initial bad decision by the main protagonist of the movie, who actually survived. You've seen the original, right?
Oh, it's been a long time, but yeah, I did see it in college, I think.
Okay. You know, the black guy, he survives until the morning when everybody's going around who had, you know, they were going around killing zombies left and right and everything. And, you know, basically doing cleanup because somebody figured out, don't just wait in the house. Get your guns and just start shooting these things because they're kind of slow. You know, and you know, they're like, they see him moving around in the house and they just shoot him. they just assume he's a zombie and shoot him in the house.
How do you say subverted the stereotype? He wasn't the first to die, he was just the last to die.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not really a horror movie, but when it comes to subverting typical tropes, Deep Blue Sea is arguably one of arguably one of the best movies that have ever existed.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was actually, I know now because the special effects in it are kind of bad, you know, by today's standards. Yeah. But I remember when I first watched that movie, I was like, say, at the time I was living in Redding, and we would always go swimming in a little lake called Whiskey Town Lake. And like my friends were like, after I watched that movie, they were like, "Hey, do you want to go swimming?" And I'm like, "Oh no, no, no! I'll stay home and do homework. You know, I'm good.
I don't want the super smart Mako sharks to get me.
I know it's freshwater, but still.
Well, they've made those movies too.
Yeah. Yes.
Whether it's a freshwater shark or it's an inland lake, but it's actually a saltwater lake. That was actually fairly recent. Dolph Lundgren was in that movie. It was called Shark Lake.
You know, I don't think I think I saw the trailer to that, but I haven't seen
it. No, I haven't seen the movie itself. But
it's probably on the Popcorn Flicks channel on YouTube.
Probably.
I've heard a lot of Dolph Lundgren movies on that channel.
There are, you know, on any free streaming service, you are likely to find a bevy of Dolph Lundgren movies. Which is okay if you just want something to turn your brain off and like, you know, I'm gonna watch Good Guy kill lots of bad guys. Mission accomplished. My needs are simple and they have been met.
Exactly. You know, another movie that I always thought that a recent film that I thought was really good before was A Quiet Place. I really thought that was I really thought, to me, that film, besides its obvious commentary on the current political landscape, I thought that it was very well made. It was really scary. It kept me on the edge of my seat. I always can tell a movie is really good if I'm not looking at my phone. And I did rent that movie, and I watched it at home, and I didn't pick up my phone once. By the end of it, I was like, oh, wow, I've got like all these text messages. I really enjoyed that film. I thought it was really scary. A few people have said there were logic problems in the movie. I don't remember any, but I did think that it was really good. You know, the idea of you just saying yay could get you eaten alive. That is to me a very frightening thing. You know, obviously, you know, with the Twitter trolls and everything. So you know, it was I really felt like, and that's what I meant by the social commentary aspect of it.
Uh-huh.
But aside from that, it was really well made. I'm excited for the sequel. John Krasinski is back directing it.
Yep.
So I think Emily Blunt is back in it as well. So I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think Blunt is back. Krasinski is directing again, which is great. The only real-ish logic problem that I think I've seen pointed out was actually in the Anna Taylor for it, where it's like, so why don't they just live by the waterfall?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, I can kind of see that, but I could also maybe false sense of security. Maybe the river floods. I don't know. Shut up and don't ruin the movie.
Another one I'd like to add, and Ginger, you bringing up that, I already forgot the title. It was Deep Seas.
Deep Star 6? Because that's a deep cut.
No, I'm trying to remember the name that you gave out.
Deep Blue Sea?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one
reminded me of Deep Star 6. But that was another one I want to bring up because it's been a while since I've seen it, and I don't think I'm confusing it with another movie, but that was another one I really liked, where it was like, they're doing research underwater, and then there's this monster, and it's like it kills them. I actually think
you might be thinking of Leviathan.
What's that, Leviathan?
You might be thinking of Leviathan, or in fact, Deep Star 6. Because
I haven't seen either of those films, so I don't know.
DC was genetically engineered sharks.
I've seen both Deep Star 6 and Leviathan, so it is quite possible I'm mixing them up. So we'll just go either Deep Star 6 or Leviathan, whichever one had the monster underwater. It's been years.
Leviathan had Peter Weller and Richard Crenna. Deep Star 6 had the guy from 30 something.
I repeat, I saw this when I was a kid, so I don't.
So did I. It's been longer for me.
You got to keep in mind, Ginger, Kid Crystal thought that the name of the characters was the same name of the actors. So
that's a problem.
Yeah, like I said, I haven't seen Leviathan or Deep Star 6, so I don't know.
I remember Leviathan was the better of the two.
We'll go with Leviathan then, because I know I liked one and disliked the other. So we'll see Leviathan's added to my list. And we're actually getting close to that time, but if you guys don't mind going over time, I do have one final question for us to end on.
Please.
We can either do top five worst horror movies, or unpopular opinions, what horror movie classic or one that is hyped you guys think actually isn't all that good?
You choose, Jacob.
I'm going to go with unpopular opinion, because I don't think I've seen enough to where I could rate a bottom. Let's see.
That would be both horror movies I've seen.
Let me think. Horror movie I didn't think was that good. Give me a second. I have seen a bunch, but I'm trying to.
Give him some thinking time. If not, I have one.
Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. Hate that movie. Hate that movie with a deep and abiding passion.
Oh.
Oh yes, I hate the way it's edited. I hate the way it's shot. I hate the way the story flows. I hate just about everything about that movie. It is so dull and boring, and I'm just like, and I remember watching it going, so Dracula is Now he's like all young and hipster wearing his John Lennon glasses. Now he's all old and super weird looking. What is going on? Why? Why? And you, Keanu Reeves, just leave, man. And it's like the whole, I disliked just about every single thing about that movie. I was like, Abraham Van Helsing is an old pudgy dude? Are you freaking kidding me? Speaking of which, this isn't really in the unpopular opinion category, but the Van Helsing movie was also disappointing.
I liked it when I was a teenager, but I haven't watched it since becoming an adult, but I'd probably share that opinion. It's been so long. The animated prequel to it is pretty good.
Yeah, I think I saw that. I think I did enjoy that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the live action was like, oh man, it's got Hugh Jackman and it's Van Helsing, and he's got like, this is going to be cool. Instead, it was just, man. The whole thing was just, man.
Yeah.
Like, should have, like, you've got an international network of monster hunters, you know, working with the Vatican, working with presumably the Ottoman Empire and other places all around the world. And it's like, and Van Helsing is supposed to be like their premier monster hunter, and he has a hard time taking down a vampire.
I have mine now. Probably the werewolf remake. Okay. I can't remember who played the main character, but it had Anthony Hopkins and Hugo Weaving in it. It was a remake of the Universal film, and I just thought it was a slasher film that was trying to go deep, because like it was clearly trying to convey a message, you know. And because I actually enjoy the black and white Universal horror films. Yeah. I think that I especially like Bela Lugosi as Dracula. But they did a remake, I want to say in 2007. And again, the name of the actor who plays the main character escapes me. But Anthony Hopkins plays his father, and Hugo Weaving plays a werewolf hunter who I found out was actually a real historical character. A historical figure. He was a bounty hunter, but they were saying that his bounty hunting was actually a cover. He was actually a werewolf hunter. I thought it was super cheesy. I thought like I said, it was just basically a slasher film. And there's like a scene in it where he turns into a werewolf. The main character turns into a werewolf and he goes on this rampage in London. And I'm like, if this isn't a pro-gun commercial, I don't know what is. I'm like, because like all these cops, they're like running at him and he's just like flinging his claws and like you see them go flying. And I'm like, first of all, I know we're supposed to suspend our physics a little bit for movies, but this, it looks super cheesy. And I thought the ending was especially dumb. Basically you find out that he's actually like part of the main character is like a part of a line of, I'm going to give spoilers, so I don't care, but, he's like part of a line of werewolf family, and Anthony Hopkins, who plays his father, is a werewolf. And you find out his manservant knew that they were a line of werewolves and even had bullets with silver. But so he could have killed the father before he turned the son into a werewolf at any time, but he doesn't do this. And then and you were just like, what the heck? Like, if I was this butler, I would have been blowing this guy away as soon as I found out he was a werewolf, especially because you find out the father had murdered a bunch of people. You know, basically Anthony Hopkins playing a monsterized Hannibal Lecter. And I was like, what is going on with this movie? So yeah, but when it first came out, like, people were like billing it as it's this big horror movie. It's a remake of this classic. And I just thought it was completely overrated. And that Hugo Weaving and Anthony Hopkins were the only two good actors in it. That's why I'm only remembering their names.
Right.
But anyway, so that would be mine.
You know, real quick, just before we get to yours, Chris, I'll let you wrap it up.
Loved it.
On the subject of werewolves, actually, a good werewolf movie, Dog Soldiers.
Oh, I've actually never seen that.
Oh, okay. It's available on a couple of different streaming services right now. So like just like free streaming services, or I think it might be even be on Netflix if you have that. And it's really good. It's this military unit in England that they kind of get tricked into going after these werewolves. Like they got tricked into it. And it's really cool the way the tension builds and everything that, holy crap, yeah, there's these, because they don't know what they're up against at first. And just seeing the way they try to fight them off and everything. It's a surprisingly good little, like cult movie. It's got Stellan Skarsgård in it before he became a name that everybody knew. And put it this way, it's really good. It makes a couple of somewhat cheesy pop culture references. But, you know, and the military unit actually puts up a pretty good fight. It's not like the type of movie where it's like, you know, the monster is necessarily completely and utterly unstoppable. And just these guys have nobody has any hope except for, you know, the two main characters. And you just know they're going to survive at the end sort of thing.
Right.
No, it's like they actually make a really good show of themselves. But ultimately, you know, they are doomed. But they put up the kind of fight you would expect a special forces unit to put up. and they figure out certain things that work and certain things that don't as they're going along. And it's a good movie. It's definitely worth the hour and a half or so that it takes to watch it. So strongly recommend that one. Crystal.
Yes. So mine,
your unpopular
say opinion. I fully hate it. I can't say I like fully hate it, but I definitely don't like it because it just not the type of horror I'm into. Saw.
I'm not. I don't like the torture porn movies at all. I don't get into them. I don't even watch them.
Like I'll give it. I like the concept of like some psycho like using like game to like decide like who dies, and I like the concept, but I remember it was because my family was watching one of them, like I don't know, maybe the latest one at the time, and it's like it was one of those situations where it's like I was sick that day as a kid, so it's like I wanted to be with my family, but I also didn't want to watch a movie, but I opted to just sit around with them anyway. I could not stomach that movie at all.
The only based one.
Based on how many they made, they overcrowded it. The only one that's decent is the first one, and even then, it's like
That's the only one that I would have any interest in seeing, and part of it is because it's got Cary Elwes and Danny Glover in it, you know. And the concept is simple. It's very simple. Two bad people, you know, chained to a pipe. You know what happens? Those sort of thing. But beyond that, I have no interest in seeing the massive, because at that point, once it got to number two, the concept became all about let's watch people die in horrible fashion.
And I think that's mostly it. I think that might be mostly it, because I don't think I've seen it. If not, I've seen bits for curiosity and wanting to watch a lot of, you know, the more held up horror movies finally. I would want to see the first one, plus, you know, Cary Elwes and whatnot. But as for, like, the other ones, no. I can't, my stomach can't handle it.
I hear you.
And on that note,
I want to, first of all, thank Jacob for coming back to talk some movies with us. And we'll have to have you back on again sometime to talk about some other movies. We may have to have more debates because... I remember you posted something about a bunch of movies you didn't like a while back. I remember Logan was on the list, and I'm like, "Well, there, buddy, hold the phone." Logan's good. Whether or not it's cohesive within the X-Men franchises that exists, it is another story. I'll grant you that. But then again, the X-Men franchise wasn't cohesive anyway.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's why I don't like it, by the way. But
okay, fair enough.
Wait for another time.
Fair enough. Yes, I actually would love to hear like the full version of why you don't like that movie. I think that'd be an interesting discussion at the least. So, in any case, until next time, Jacob, we'll have you back sometime in the nearish future, I'm sure. And everyone else, Saturday, we're going to be back Saturday again, so we're short cycling you. And we're going to be having someone on. He shared a story on Twitter a few weeks back, and it was a story about how when he was younger, his girlfriend had an abortion against his will, and just the effect that that had on his life. So he's going to be on the show, and I'm not giving out a name or anything because I don't know if he wants his name shared yet. So, stick with us this coming Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern time for that particular conversation. And until then, and always, keep fighting the good fight.